Krishna Varnam Tusa Krishnam Sangapanga Siparsadam Yagya Sankirtana Prayar Vijantihi Sumedasaha. Age of Kali, intelligent persons perform congregational chanting to worship the incarnation of Godhead, who constantly sings the names of Krishna. Although his complexion is not blackish, he is Krishna himself. He is accompanied by his associates, servants, weapons, and confidential companions. Purport. This same verse is quoted by Krishna Das Kaviraj Goswami in Chaitanya Charitamrita, Adi Lila, Chapter 3, Verse 52. His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada, has given the following commentary on this verse. This text is from Srimad Bhagavatam. Srila Jiva Goswami has explained this verse in his commentary on the Bhagavatam, known as the Krama Sandarbha, wherein he says that Lord Krishna also appears with a golden complexion. That golden Lord Krishna is Lord Chaitanya, who is worshipped by intelligent men in this age. That is confirmed in Srimad Bhagavatam by Garga Muni, who said that although the child Krishna was blackish, he also appears in three other colors, red, white, and yellow. He exhibited his white and red complexions in the Satya and Treta Yugas respectively. He did not exhibit the remaining color, yellow gold, until he appeared as Lord Chaitanya, who is known as Gaur Hari. The incarnation of Lord Chaitanya is also described in Sri Vishnu Sahasranama, which appears in chapter 189 of the Dana Dharma Parva of the Mahabharata. Srila Jiva Goswami has quoted this reference as follows. Quote, in his early pastimes he appears as a householder with a golden complexion. His limbs are beautiful, and his body, smeared with the pulp of sandalwood, seems like molten gold. In his later pastimes, he accepts the sannyasa order, and he is equipoised and peaceful. He is the highest abode of peace and devotion, for he silences the impersonalist non-devotees. Om Ganatidamandasya Ganatana Silakaya Taksunin Mulitam Yenatasma Sri Gurave Namaha Sri Chaitanya Manovistam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupakadamaya Dadati Swapadantikam He Krishna Karana Sindhu Dina Bandhu Tikatpate Gopesha Kupika Kanta Radha Kanta Namastate Tata Kanchana Gorange Radhe Vindavanishwade Vishvanu Sute Devi Pranamami Hari Paya Jaya Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Dvaita Garadha Shiva Sri Gaura Bhakti Vinaya Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare. Of all the glorious and most auspicious and fortunate occasions that have ever come in the past or await us in the future, there is, philosophically speaking, no day greater than the eighth evening of the waning moon in the month of Bhadra, when Lord Krishna appeared in his form as Shyamasundara and illumined the sky with the first indications of the highest good fortune to be achieved by the living entities. Philosophically speaking, Sri Krishna Janmashtami and Gaur Purnim are equal. And yet, from the standpoint of the living entities who are suffering in this material world, and their opportunity for attaining the highest good fortune ever conceivable, we would have to conclude that the full moon eve, known as Gaur Purnim, is actually an occasion for more celebration and hope and good fortune. In this verse in the Srimad Bhagavatam, Karabhajna Muni is explaining to King Nimi the various avatars, and here he is revealing the coming of the golden avatar. And this whole series of verses where Karabhajna Muni is explaining this very secret, covered, concealed, confidential appearance of the Lord appears to be quite different from the descriptions of the Kali Yuga as given by the great saint Shukadev Goswami to Maharaj Parikshit in the 12th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam. If you compare the descriptions of the age of Kali here in the 11th canto with that in the 12th canto, you'll find that they don't seem to be talking about the same age at all. And just to give a synopsis, we heard Srila Prabhupada back in 74, I believe, reading the 12th canto and translating as he went, explaining the symptoms of the age of Kali. He read verse after verse how in the age of Kali, religion will be pretense. Business will be based on falsity and deception. Relationships will be based on psychophysical, emotional, sexual attraction. Marriage will be a matter of mutual consent without any consideration of the benefit of any kind of relationship. The living entities will be tormented by drought, freezing cold, driving snow, heavy taxes, and after eventually being forced to leave home, trying to survive by foraging in the wilderness, will meet a horrible demise. And despite so many disturbances, hardly anyone will show any inclination whatsoever to take shelter of the holy name of the Lord. The descriptions given by Shukadeva Goswami to Maharaj Parikshit in the 12th canto of the Kali Yuga are rather depressing and discouraging. And yet, as Gaudiya Vaishnavas, we're not supposed to be depressed and discouraged. Because here in the 11th canto, Karabhajna Muni is explaining to King Nimi a completely different perspective. It appears that they're actually talking about two completely different yugas. And in fact, they are. Because as Srila Prabhupada comments on this verse, quoting the Mahabharata and Garga Muni's prophecies at the birth of Krishna, that he has his white and red form, and now he has his Shyamasundara form, he also has a golden form, indicating that the Lord appears in every yuga. But Prahlad Maharaj, he addresses the Lord as Triyuga, one who appears in the three of the yugas. And there are so many descriptions that there is no I mean, even Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya was arguing on that point, that there's no avatar described for the Kali Yuga. So we find many apparent contradictions even in the Holy Scripture. And actually there appears to be many contradictions even between the different Vaishnava paramparas. And fortunately, all differences are ultimately rectified in the higher synthesis given by Lord Gauranga himself. It was explained in the Satya Yuga in Koladweep, which is non-different from Govardhan Hill in the holy realm of Navadweep, where one Brahmana, Vasudev, was worshipping his deity of Varaha with great devotion. This Vasudev was such a pure-hearted Brahmana, worshipping with the best fragrant flowers and fruits he could attain, worshipping his deity, bathing him in Ganges water with great faith and devotion, always praying, "My Lord, please purify my vision, please purify my heart, please reveal yourself to me and make my life worthwhile." And one day while he was worshipping his little Varaha deity, that deity suddenly expanded into a gigantic form with his tusks, you know, piercing the sky. Beautiful reddish form with white tusks like lightning and a golden crown, and with beautiful lotus eyes looking down upon his servitor and telling him how pleased he was because you have worshipped me in my most dear abode, Navadvip Dham, where I will appear in the future in my golden form, and you will come again to serve me then. And then the Lord disappeared. And as Vasudev, he was a very learned pundit. He had studied all the Vedas. He had never detected any indication of a golden avatar. So he went back again from beginning to end and searching all the Vedas, and found to his surprise everywhere there was indications of a golden avatar, which he had never even noticed before. And this dilemma was described very wonderfully by Lord Nityananda Prabhu as he was taking Jiva Goswami on Parikrama of Navadvip Dham, revealing to him the esoteric concealed truth regarding Lord Gauranga, telling him how before his appearance and during his Leela, Maya Devi, by the order of the Lord, kept all the indications of this avatar secret. And even though they're to be found everywhere in the Vedas, the scholars could not detect them. They're just like covered. But by the mercy of the most magnanimous Lord Nityananda, who ordered Mayadevi at the right time, now you remove that covering. Then the obvious truths became visible to all, and all difficulties in understanding Lord Gauranga came to an end. Nevertheless, commenting on this discussion between Lord Nityananda Prabhu and Jiva Goswami, Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur says, although he is the most confidential, most secret, most covered, concealed jhana avatar, I know very well that he is all in all. And he described how Mayadevi previously kept all these things hidden and in the future would reveal them all. So apparently there is an avatar in this age of Kali who gives the Yuga Dharma in the form of the chanting of the holy names. Because we know the Yuga Dharma is given by the Lord himself, usually. It can be given by any one of his portions or plenary portions, or even an especially favored and empowered jiva who serves as Shaktavesh avatar can give the Yuga Dharma. But love of Krishna and pure devotion for him cannot be delegated or conferred by anyone except himself. So when Lord Krishna appeared in the Dwapara Yuga toward the end, he manifests that whole ocean of devotion, which is the nature of the topmost dweep in the spiritual sky, Goloka Vrindavan, and then he appeared himself within that ocean and manifests his wonderful Vrindavan Leela before the vision of the world, and then he disappeared within the ocean. And then he began to reflect that for so long I have not bestowed loving devotional service upon the residents of the mortal world. And without devotional service, the whole creation is absolutely meaningless. Therefore, and he was even actually kind of lamenting that in his appearance as Lord Krishna with his Braj Leela associates, hardly anyone actually attained devotional service. A few, like the sages and Dandakaranya and some remote other individuals, were inspired to become pure devotees and attain to Krishna Prema, but most of the world didn't even recognize Lord Krishna or accept him as the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And he was thinking that his mission was not complete. So he resolved. Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami analyzes the thoughts of Lord Krishna in Chaitanya Charitamrita, that I will have to appear again, and I will have to assume the form of a devotee, because without practicing devotional service, you can't teach it to anybody else. So I'll bring all my associates, making them all mad with ecstatic love for Krishna. We will come to reveal such pastimes which attract the minds of all living entities back to their constitutional position as my loving servitors. And resolving in this way, he came in the Kali Yuga and gave on this most auspicious and fortunate blessed day the first indications in this darkened age that the highest achievement ever conceivable at any time in the life of this universe could be easily attained by the fortunate souls who are so blessed as to take birth in this Kali Yuga. And even in this particular chapter of the Srimad Bhagavatam, we hear Karbhajana Muni explaining, and Prabhupada would quote, repeat this, how the demigods are waiting and praying to take birth in the Kali Yuga. And that does not at all match the descriptions given by Shukadeva Goswami in the 12th canto. And this is some kind of paradox that we should try to understand and resolve, and can only be achieved by the mercy of Lord Gauranga and those dear associates of his who are like honeybees hovering at his lotus feet and can unravel this mystery of his descent to some extent and reveal it to us. So we know that in every yuga, there is a yuga avatar who bestows the yuga dharma. And in the Satya Yuga, he is white. In the Treta Yuga, he is red. In the Kali Yuga, he is black. And usually there's no description given for the Kali Yuga, although sometimes he's mentioned as having a golden form, as Gaur Narayan, who gives the Yuga Dharma. That happens in every Kali Yuga. This golden form of the Lord gives the Yuga Dharma in the form of the chanting of the holy name. Then why does Shukadeva Goswami say that no one is inclined to take up the chanting? It's a fact. And this is true for 999 out of 1,000 cycles called the Divya Yuga, or the cycle of Chaturyugas. But every one out of 1,000, which means once in a day of Brahma, once in a period of 8,640,000,000 years, there's an alteration in the sequence of yuga avatars. For the Satya and Treta Yuga, it's the same.
And in the Dwapara Yuga, it's different because Lord Krishna then comes in his original feature. And when Krishna comes in his original feature, as Swayam Bhagavan, what he gives is somewhat different than the Yuga Dharma. The Yuga Dharma, for the Dwapara age, we know, is deity worship. And people were performing that service even way before the appearance of Lord Krishna, knowing of his coming toward the end of that age. And yet, Krishna was lamenting that no one really achieved pure love. And Shukadev Goswami is lamenting that no one in the Kali Yuga really is inclined to take shelter of the holy name, even though the Lord himself gives that Yuga Dharma. Akari Bhajana Muni here is explaining that practically everyone will be inclined to take up devotional service and chant the holy name and perfect their lives in the Kali Yuga. So apparently when the Lord comes in his original feature as Swayam Bhagavan, rather than his partial feature as the Yuga Avatar, even though he may give the same process of worship, it's different in the result, in the possible attainment. And you can use an analogy like a king. Srila Prabhupada used the analogy of a king in the prison. When the king goes to the prison, he may look like a prisoner. He's behind the bars and he just looks kind of like everybody else. But there's a big difference. He comes and goes as he wants. He can eat whatever he wants or do whatever he wants. So why does he appear in the prison? He's not like a prisoner. Although these days, usually when the king ends up in prison, it's because he is a prisoner. Anyway, in old times, he went for another reason. To encourage the prisoners. Then why don't you rectify your lives and become free? So when the Lord comes to the mortal realm, it's like that. He comes to encourage us and express how he loves us. And he hasn't forgotten or forsaken or abandoned us. And he wants to help us come home. So ordinarily, the highest aspiration for any citizen of any kingdom would be something like not only to become free of the prison, but if he actually became very fortunate, he might attain a position in the king's court and become one of his ministers. Wouldn't that be a glorious achievement? And wouldn't the king be proud? And ordinarily, that's about the highest achievement any prisoner could conceive. And yet, since the king is free, and he's not bound by the laws of his own kingdom, he has the right that if he so desires, he can choose one citizen or even one prisoner and adopt him into his own family. And they can live not only in the kingdom, but they can actually live right within the king's own household and become like one of his family members. He has that right. He has that freedom. And this analogy gives us some understanding of the difference between the Yuga Dharma as given by each and every Yuga Avatar, who gives the process by which we can ascend to Vaikuntha and live in the kingdom of the Lord, governed by the rules and regulations of his loving devotional service. The attainment of the Lord's own personal family, to live in the innermost recesses of his country abode with him, without all the formalities of reverence, but with sweet, pure love as governing all relationships, that is possible when the Lord comes in his original Vrindavan form, with his original Vrindavan associates, and teach us the path of pure, loving, spontaneous devotional service. even higher than the service which is governed by rules and regulations, but is spontaneous and free from any awe and reverence which makes a distinction between the Lord and us, which creates a certain barrier which impedes the flow of pure and spontaneous intimate love, which is really what Krishna wants. And therefore, when Krishna comes in the 28th Chaturyug, in the reign of Vaivashvata Manu, in the Dvapara age, he reveals the nature of Braj Leela. He manifests his Braj right here as Bhoma Vrindavan and reveals to the world what is the nature of pure, spontaneous, sweet, loving exchange with the Lord. But hardly anyone was really attracted. And when he wound up his Leela, he took all his associates and went back where he came from. Of course, as a consequence, he liberated everyone within the universe. They all went back to Godhead, to Vaikuntha. But hardly anybody actually entered into Braj, except those sages of Dandakaranya and a few others. By great qualification from previous lifetimes and great endeavor of their own, they actually attained the gift inherent to that appearance of the Lord. But it was very rare. And therefore Krishna was lamenting that even though I revealed the nature of pure spontaneous love of my Braj Leela associates, hardly anyone was attracted. He was thinking himself somewhat unsuccessful. And then he came again in his golden form. And when this avatar came to this world, he spread some kind of fabulous good fortune upon the surface of this earth. That, I mean, just like with Krishna, you know, anyone who was averse to him, anyone who criticized or opposed him or fought with him or avoided him, they were all liberated. The whole universe was liberated. That's explained in the talks between Lord Gauranga and Haridas Thakur and then Antilila of Chaitanya Charitamrita. Haridas is saying that just like when Lord Krishna came by year, because Lord Gauranga was lamenting, how will the mlechas and non-believers be delivered? And Haridas Thakur said, they're already delivered. By the sound of your kirtan, the whole universe is liberated. And then Mahaprabhu said, well, what happens when it's all empty? He said, oh, you'll just wake up the dormant jivas from the Brahma Jyoti, wherever they may be, and engage them again in fruitive activities. It'll stay filled like it was before. So the whole universe was liberated in this Kali Yuga, just like it was in the previous Dvapara Yuga. But then the conversation takes a very interesting course. After explaining how everyone in the universe was delivered, Haridas, we'll hear his words from Chaitanya Charitamrita. He explains, just like when previously, when Lord Ramachandra left this world, he took all the living entities of Ayodhya with him and then again filled Ayodhya with other jivas. Then he tells Mahaprabhu, my dear Lord, you have set a plan in motion by descending on the material world, but no one can understand how you are acting. And then he explains how formerly when you appeared in Vrindavan, you liberated everyone from the whole universe. And then Haridas says, by descending as an avatar in Navadvip Dham, you, just like Krishna, have already delivered all the living entities of the universe. And then, after revealing to us in his talks with Lord Gauranga that Haridas Thakur is fully aware of how everyone in the universe was liberated at that time, Haridas makes an interesting comment. He says, one may say that he understands the glories of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. He may know whatever he may know, but as far as I'm concerned, this is my conclusion. My dear Lord, your pastimes are just like an ocean of nectar. It is not possible for me to conceive how great that ocean is, or even to understand a drop of it. And then Mahaprabhu became astonished. he realized that Haridas Thakur understands a lot more than what he just said. And Mahaprabhu was thinking, how does he understand my confidential pastimes? So from this discussion, as well as from many other sources, we can conclude that there is much, much more to Lord Gauranga's pastimes than just delivering everyone in the universe and giving the Yuga Dharma. There is a mystery behind the scenes of the visible Leela of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, which is very interesting. And some people never bothered to figure it out, whereas others who thought about it a little bit more thought, this is very complex, and didn't sweat over it trying to understand. Others who gave it a little bit more attention realized that this particular avatar is very exalted, even amongst avatars. Because look what he achieved during his Leela by such pastimes as delivering Jaga and Marai and the renunciation of Raghunath and the retirement of Rupan Sanatan from prime minister and finance minister to become beggars in the forest. And the humbling of such arrogant personalities as the Digvijaya Pandit, and the great metamorphosis in the hearts of great impersonalists like Prakasananda Saraswati, and the forgiveness of such offenders as Gopal Chapala, and the exalted achievement of a born Malecha like Haridas Thakur. This avatar is a very extraordinary prowess, even as avatars, even amongst the category of avatars. This is some kind of special appearance of the Lord, some fortunate persons concluded. But then another doubt arises, that if the Lord liberated everyone in the whole universe, what is so great about his liberating Rupan Sanatan from the Mohammedan government, or liberating or delivering Jagai Madai, or forgiving Gopal Chapala, or the great metamorphosis and the great impersonalist? What is so great about these pastimes if everyone in the whole universe was liberated? And then another doubt arises, that what is the great significance of the renunciation of Raghunath Das when he's one of those eternally liberated Braj Leela associates of the Lord in the first place? When you consider from that perspective, his giving up a wife who is more beautiful than an angel and a fortune greater than Indra isn't such a great deal. Now, those wonderful pastimes certainly had some benefit during the Lord's Leela, but the real benefit was not during the 48 years of his manifest presence. The glories of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu cannot be, you know, limited to the duration of his Leela. The extent of his glories and mercy extends to the realm of infinity. And therefore we can understand why Karabhajana Muni is so enthusiastic to explain to King Nima why this age of Kali, he's not talking about every age of Kali, is so blessed and so fortunate that the demigods are waiting and praying and trying to achieve, but it's very rare that they could even take birth in this Kali Yuga. Why? Because Krishna Prem is very rarely achieved. Srila Prabodhananda Saraswati, an intimate associate who very well understood the inner mood of Lord Gauranga, has explained these things nicely in his Chaitanya Chandramata, which rise like the ocean tide and has made him immortal, in his words. The direction to prem, not the kind of prem found in Vaikuntha, but in Braj, which is inconceivable even to the residents of Vaikuntha. That direction to prem as being the effect of chanting the holy name. No one ever knew that before. the honey-sweet mellows of Vrindavan, which nobody ever really understood. The highest peak of devotional splendor, Srimati Radhika, who no one really understood her glories before. All these things and so much more Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has brought to this world and given as the gift and the attainment of the holy name, because he's an ocean of mercy. So we can see that Mahaprabhu did much more than just liberate the whole universe and take everyone back to Vaikuntha. He did take everyone back, even those who were inimical. They all went to Vaikuntha, which is ordinarily difficult to attain. But what to speak of those who were kind, who appreciated him, who became humble, who chanted his holy name, who assisted him, or what to speak of those who surrendered? They all became immediately eligible for the highest, sweetest, most concentrated essence of prema, as found and known only amongst the residents of Vrindavan. But even in Krishna's Vrindavan Leela, which was so extremely rare for anyone to attain, this became possible for everyone as the gift of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Then Prabodhananda Saraswati, in his subsequent verses of Chaitanya Chandramata, begins to go through some interesting, I wouldn't want to call it mood swings, but he goes into a chapter of lamentation where he reveals his deep sorrow that this is after the disappearance of Lord Gauranga. He said, that same yoga peat is there, like the stamen of a golden lotus floating in the celestial Ganges. And that same Purushottama Kshetra, where you concluded your pastime, still makes that sea a holy place. And many of your associates are still present in the world, and they are still chanting the holy names. But where, oh where, is that festival of ecstatic love which inundated every home during your manifest lila? Hey, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, such an ocean of mercy, will I ever see your opulences again? When the Lord left this world, when it is such a shock that the chanting of the holy name continued as long as his associates remained present, but they were so distraught by his disappearance that they didn't stay for long. And when they left this world, then Kali attacked with a vengeance. And then Kali was very surprised when he found the sky of his darkened age illumined by some golden aura, which made him understand that this was Kali Yuga in name only. And he had to again leave the universe because he was not allowed residence here as long as the Supreme Original Personality of Godhead in the Swayam Bhagavan feature was present. Kali had to leave right at the beginning of his lila. I mean, service. Or whatever he does. And then another interesting phenomena. I remember in 1974 hearing Srila Prabhupada translating the 12th canto right before us, explaining the symptoms of the age toward the end of the Kali Yuga, just before the whole world becomes so saturated with sin that Kali just comes and finishes it off. And everybody was thinking, I asked a few devotees afterwards, and they were all thinking the same, it sounds like current events. That the ashrams will be known only by different symbols, and the sannyasis will come out of the forest and live like householders, and householders will be considered religious to whatever extent as they're wealthy, and change in status in ashram is just by changing the symbols. Nothing to do with saintly behavior. The attainment of varnashram is to fill your belly. And everybody was thinking, that's the end of the age? We've already pretty much come pretty close to that, and there's 427,000 years left. It was rather bewildering. Well, actually, the extent of Kali's torment in the world now is quite similar to what it will be at the end of this age.
So what does that mean?
If such a short time after Mahaprabhu concluded his lila in this world, if his mission, rather than expanding as one would assume, seems to be heading towards extinction, if that's our conclusion, you couldn't be said to have entirely faulty reasoning. And anyone who would come to such a conclusion simply does not know the nature of a farmer or a gardener. Mahaprabhu, he considered himself a gardener. And Kaviraj Goswami uses the analogy of the tree of devotional service to explain the Lord and his and Nityananda Prabhu and their associates as branches and leaves and twigs and flowers of that tree. So he explains how Mahaprabhu, he came and he planted seeds. Now anybody who knows the nature of seeds understands that there's certain stages in the development and the growth of a seed. First, the farmer brings his stalks of seed and piles them in the corner of the field, and it looks like he's got so much seed. And then he spreads them in the field and harrows them in, and it looks like it's all gone. There's nothing left. And then it rains. And then those who are a little far-sighted can see over the earth-colored soil, kind of like a green hue. Here and there, not uniform at first, usually. And then after some more rain, the whole thing becomes so green that you can't even see the earth anymore through it. This is the nature of the life of a seed. And then gradually it grows to fruition and makes its own seeds and fruits and flowers. So considering the stages in the life of the seed, we would have to conclude that we're at the second stage now, or the third. Mahaprabhu brought down heaps and heaps of prema from Goloka, and with his associates, he distributed them throughout the world, and then sent down rains of mercy, and then he left. And then it looked like everything was gone shortly after his disappearance. But now, miraculously, just 500 years afterwards, I mean, already those who are a little farsighted are beginning to appreciate. Even European scholars, just back in the early part of this century, were commenting like, you know, during his lila, Mahaprabhu's influence was somewhat localized. But times will come in the near future when his powers will resound throughout the world with force that will sleep no more. In the early part of this century, European scholars and pundits were commenting like this and trying to go to Navadvip Dham to retire. So those were the far-sighted ones. Now, people are seeing, just like, you know, not too many years ago, the communist government proclaimed that its greatest enemies were American dress and American music and the Hare Krishna movement. They knew it was a great threat. Why? Because their philosophy is, if I understand it properly, that there's a major imbalance somewhere in this world. Everybody knows that. But the communists think it's an imbalance of wealth. Some people think it's an imbalance of education or different theories. But the communists think it's wealth. And therefore, since the majority of wealth and its subsequent pleasures are hoarded by just a few, leaving the rest of the world in misery, then we should establish equality by forcibly taking from the rich, distributing equal to everyone, and destroying all distinctions of high and low, rich and poor, educated, uneducated, good and bad, even religion and irreligion. We'll eliminate all distinctions and everyone will be equally happy. But the effect of their work has just made the world more miserable than ever. And they understand that the Hare Krishna movement is actually their greatest threat because it's a superior form of communism conceived by the saints and sages of yore. Really, equality, as far as, you know, obliterating all distinctions, happens only once in the life of Brahma. It happens at the time of the apocalypse. Then there's equality. The rest of the time there's individuality and all kinds of variety. So that philosophy isn't very good. And even if you did it, even if you could take from the rich and give to the poor, you know, everybody's standard of what pleasures is different. People build different kinds of houses, they arrange their furniture different, they have different numbers of children and cars, and you know, everybody's idea of pleasure and happiness is different. So, but if we can just preach Krishna consciousness and help people understand that the real imbalance in the world is because people have lost the understanding that the spirit soul is different from the body. The soul has different needs and different desires from the body. The soul cannot be pleased by the pleasures of the body. The soul needs its own source of pleasure and life and nourishment in the form of devotional service. And if you give that to the people, then automatically everything else will be adjusted. The rich will realize that they don't need so much riches and they'll give it to the poor. And the poor won't be so eager to get it. And then a feeling of charity and sharing and caring will obliterate the discrepancies in the world, naturally. So, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu left indications of things yet to be, not during the period of his manifest lila, but as seeds of hope planted in this world of death. For the welfare of the rest of the life of this universe and those who happen to take birth in this world during that time. And that is actually the wonder of Mahaprabhu's pastimes. The deliverance of Jagai and Madai, the renunciation of Raghunath Das, the retirement of Rupa and Sanatan, is not so glorious when seen in perspective of everyone in the universe being liberated anyway, but is very hope-giving and life-giving when you see it in perspective of what it really is. These pastimes are seeds of hope planted in this world of death to show us the potency of the holy name, to give us faith in the holy name, to attract our attention, to help us develop some taste for the holy name. Because if the original Jagai and Madai could be delivered by the holy name, then we can also be delivered by the holy name. If Raghunath Das could lose all interest in his wealth and wife, who is more beautiful than an angel, then we can also lose our attraction for wealth and women. If the metamorphosis in the hearts of Prakasananda Saraswati and Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya, it's meant to give us hope that no matter how swollen our ego may be by learning, we can also become humble by the potency of the holy name and the mercy of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So he left seeds of hope to brighten the sky of this darkened age and attract our hearts to the mellows of Vrindavan and the means to attain such a fortune as could never be achieved even in the Satyayug, even in any other Dwapar or Kali Yug, except for that extremely rare and blessed Kali Yuga when Chaitanya Mahaprabhu comes. And therefore you can't even really call it a Kali Yuga at all. It's more like a Prem Yuga. And Srila Prabhupada said, it's in the Puranas, that there will be a 10,000 year period within this Kali Yuga when Krishna consciousness for 5,000 years is just increasing more and more and then gradually decreasing. and still continues somewhat to the end of the age, when everything is finished and Satyayuga again begins. And those residents of Satyayuga will just look back and lament bitterly that they just missed the Kali Yuga and will have to wait another day of Brahma for such an opportunity. That great fortune which appeared in this world with the rising of the moon. Is still available to us. The Lord gave so freely and indiscriminately the opportunity for entrance into the sweet and holy groves of Braj. He gave it so easily, and everyone is automatically delivered, at least to Vaikuntha at that time. The same achievement is available now. One slight difference. There are conditions and there is a fare. The fare is you have to take shelter of the holy name, and the conditions are you have to avoid the offenses, beginning with blaspheming the saintly devotees who dedicated their lives to propagating the holy name, which is very prominent in this Kali Yuga, and means that our only recourse is to take shelter of the holy name. So, in this way, Mahaprabhu's Leela is like the planting of seeds meant for us to reap the fruits. Seeds of hope which will gradually develop into a great tree, expanding its fragrance and shade and shelter throughout the universe, giving shelter and hope to those of us in the remainder of this blessed Kali Yuga to attain so easily the highest achievement ever possible. Nevertheless, any great achievement is not without its dangers and hazards. Because in this darkened time, after those seeds were planted, before their full manifestation, in this darkened twilight hour, Kali, lurking in the darkness, knowing that he has very little time left to wreak havoc upon this world because those seeds are beginning to sprout and he's going to be again driven out, he has concentrated all his energy on breaking the hopeful, expectant yearning of the homebound pilgrims with deception and controversy and quarrel, because he knows the Lord in this age does not take up arms. He destroys through internal dissension and controversy. And like bandits in the desert or wolves in sheep's clothing, Kali, you see his influence everywhere. Artificiality in place of the real, be it speech or customs or words or relationships or religion or anything, is everywhere. So we have to watch out as far as where we place our faith and where we take shelter and where we reveal our hearts, because the agents of Kali are practically impossible to detect. And their mission is to give to those weary homebound pilgrims deceptive hope, what they call refreshing water to sustain us in the desert is actually an intoxicating beverage which will make us delirious and forget the goal and purpose of life. Anyone who propounds any theories breaking our hope and spirit to follow Srila Prabhupada's instructions must be considered to be possibly an agent of Kali. And can our only defense and protection is to take shelter of the holy name in the association of devotees who have dedicated their lives to humbly propagating the mission of Srila Prabhupada. And in this way, that which was so inconceivable and rarely attainable can be ours if we simply take shelter of the holy name in the divine association of sincere devotees and carefully guard against the 10 offenses. Then we can reap the full benefit of that gift of prem which Chaitanya Mahaprabhu brought down to this world and is available not in any other yuga. To miss such a once-in-a-lifetime of the universe opportunity is a misfortune beyond our ability to conceive. We should not be so concerned about our physical or economic conditions or whether we have AIDS or cancer or die. Death is our constant companion in this world. No counting how many times we've witnessed death, both individually and collectively. This is the apocalypse. That shouldn't be any cause of fear or lamentation. Our only fear or lamentation would be the thought of missing this once in the lifetime of the universe opportunity which Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has brought. And Srila Prabhupada, out of his unlimited compassion, has brought to us. So let us make our lives perfect by pursuing that goal. This will do good to our inner self and to all the world. Thank you very much. Are there any questions or comments? When Lord Gauranga came, he had internal and external purposes. The internal are described by Kaviraj Goswami. Desiring to understand the glory of Srimati Radharani's love, the wonderful qualities in him which she alone can relish through her love, and the sublime happiness she feels when she tastes the sweetness of his love. The Supreme Lord Hari, richly endowed with her emotions and donned her complexion, appeared in Navadvipam. He did not want to be bothered with understanding that he was the Supreme Personality of God, and he wanted to be like a devotee and live humbly and simply. So he had to keep that concealed. And therefore, when he was in Jagannath Puri with Lord Nityananda, there was an interesting conversation. He told Lord Nityananda, you see, this is as he was, you know, approaching his Gambhir Leela, really fulfilling his internal purposes, which Advaita in his sonnet gave him permission to do. He told Lord Nityananda, if you just sit here with me like a peaceful sage, what benefit will that do for the world? You, Nityananda Avadhut. Avadhut means one who's not so concerned with social rules and norms and customs and actually has a profound disregard for them. There are such beings even in Vaishnava Sampradaya. We're not supposed to imitate, but sometimes the influence is seen. Anyway, he told him, if you don't wildly distribute this love of God in Bengal, then my words will not be prophecy, they'll be false. Because I said I would deliver that realm, but I couldn't do it. Because you know, Mahaprabhu, in Nadia, he was the pundit. He was acting like the Yuga Avatar, defeating everybody. Even the Digvijay Pandit when he came to him. So, he had the benediction that whatever he spoke, all the Vedas and Saraswati would just give him whatever he needed. So he couldn't even remember his name. I thought, the boon of the demigod seems to be unsure. He was praying, Saraswati, what happened? And she appeared. You have finally attained the fulfillment of knowledge, meaning the absolute truth. I didn't cheat you by my benediction. It was just fulfilled. So in his own realization, that Digvijaya Pandit thought that couldn't be anybody but the Lord. He was thinking, I was so proud of my learning that he defeated me in public and preserved my dignity and my self-respect. Nobody but the Lord could do that. He was thinking he was so proud that a public defeat would have surely killed him. And it almost did. But Mahaprabhu carefully managed the thing. No, don't, wouldn't anybody laugh or anything. And he treated her with such respect and dignity. That had to be the Lord. Nobody is that learned and humble too. So like that, he was defeating all the pandits, because Navadvip Dham was the emporium of culture and learning. And you know, everybody who wanted to be a really a big pandit, they had to have a diploma from Nadia, Navadvip. You know, something like Oxford or Rutgers or wherever these people go is nothing compared to Navadvip. Nobody was really recognized as being worthy of having anything to be proud about if they didn't have a diploma from Navadvip. So everybody went there, not for learning, for arguing, really. They just argued day and night. And Mahaprabhu, he'd really get them going, you know. And even in recess, when they went out to recess, you know, they'd fight all morning, then they'd go out for recess and play in the Ganges, and he'd just keep it going, you know. Your teacher's got no brains. What? He's got me for a student. He's the best. And then he just get everybody arguing, and then he start fighting, and then he make these little missiles out of clay and hurl them at each, and shoot them at each other until the whole Ganges was just turned into a sea of mud. There was no water. People came to bathe. There was no water. Just mud. And then the people would say, I gotta call the police and the Nawab and the whole thing. And he just swim across. It was like in Braj Leela, you know, the gopis were saying, hey, you're not supposed to come to this god. We're going to tell Nanda Maharaj, and if he doesn't do anything, we'll get Kamsa. It was like the same thing. It was this Yuga Dharma thing. He was defeating all the pandits because they came from the whole world there to fight. And he defeated them all. He was acting like the Yuga Avatar then. First of all, making everybody humble. What's the use of distributing the holy name if you can't teach people to be humble? So he humbled everybody. Then he started preaching holy name. Then he went to Jagannath Puri for his own internal purposes. And then realizing that he didn't really finish giving love of God in Bengal. So he told Nityananda, Avadhut, you have to go back. Because I said I would deliver that place, but I forgot and got distracted. And you have to go do it. And they're all pandits anyway. They're not going to listen to a bigger pandit. They can't convince themselves of anything. And it just goes on forever, you know, arguing. It doesn't get deleted. And Mahaprabhu's Leela is beyond logic and argument and reason and anything. So he said, you have to go back and by a superior display of devotion, touch their hearts. So he said, okay. So he got Ram Das and Gadadhar Das and Raghunath Vaidyan and the Gopals, and they went. But they were so intoxicated with love of God, they couldn't even remember their bodies, what to speak of, what path to take. So about every third day they'd ask somebody, where's the road to Bengal? I said, what? It's 20 miles back, you missed it. So they go back, but then they forgot to turn. They went 4 days the other way, and they asked somebody, where's Bengal? You are lost. And then when they heard that, they would just laugh. And then they finally made it to Panihati, and because that was their first headquarters in Bengal. And they, for 3 months, they just had kirtan. Nobody thought to eat or sleep or do anything but kirtan. And they were so excited, you know, they'd go out on the branches of trees, and these gopals, they'd just walk out on little tiny branches, and somehow they wouldn't fall. And if they kept going, then they did fall. They didn't get hurt. And, you know, Nityananda, he's the abode of spiritual strength, and his associates, even though they're very, you know, like frolicsome, like children, they were powerful, you know, like one of them wanted to dance. There wasn't anybody around, so he just embraced seven trees, huge trees, picked them right out of the earth and began dancing with them. And then Abhiram, you know, he wanted a flute. He couldn't find one, so he picked up a tree that 16 men couldn't budge and began playing. They were powerful, but it was devotion. So then, 3 months, it's just nonstop kirtan. And even, you know, parents, they wouldn't even ask their children to come back when they went, they knew. So then one day, Nityananda Prabhu, he got up on the deity's throne. Just like Mahaprabhu did, Mahaprakash, he got up on the throne. And it began to reveal his Aishwarya nature. And the devotees performed Abhishek. And then he told Raghava Pandit, you know, I live in a kadamba forest, and I like kadamba flowers, so can you get me some? He said, my lord, it's not the season. They're not blossoming now. I said, well, just go out in your yard and look. You might find some somewhere. So he went out. When he went out, he smelled this kadamba flowers, like all pervading. Where is that coming? He looked. It's coming from his lemon tree. His lemon tree was blossoming in kadamba flowers. So he quickly made a garland and put it on Lord Nityananda. Then he smiled and he saw, and that fragrance just pervaded the whole atmosphere. He said, where'd you find the flowers? I thought you said it wasn't the season. They were growing my lemon tree. And then that fragrance, just the whole atmosphere was just pervaded by the fragrance of kadamba flowers. And everybody was just so happy. And then another wonder occurred. The fragrance changed to Dhammanaka flowers. I was looking around. Where's that coming from? And nobody could figure it out. And they went and looked at the lemon tree and they couldn't find Dhammanaka flowers anywhere. Where is that coming from? And nobody could figure out. Finally, they looked at Lord Nityananda and he was smiling. He said, that fragrance is coming from my brother because he was so attracted by your nonstop kirtan. He has come here in the form of a tree and is flowering in Dhammanaka flowers, and you can detect that fragrance even though you can't see him. So you just keep up with that kirtan. And then they just went all over Bengal and delivered the whole place to such an extent. Then finally they came back to Navadvip, and then Lord Nityananda stayed in the house of the Brahmin. And there was an army of dacoits who had their headquarters nearby. And then their spy came back and said, today I have really seen the extent of Durga's mercy. That there's this Avadhut who's got gold earrings and gold necklaces and pearls and jewels and gems, like a walking treasure chest. He doesn't even have any guards. He doesn't even really know what he's wearing. Sometimes he doesn't wear it. Anyway. So they said, this is... So then tonight we'll go rob him. So then they became ecstatic. One thought, the jeweled necklace is mine. The other said, the gold earrings are mine. They were all just made up their mind what they were going to get. So they went to a nearby tree at sunset. They sent out one spy, go see if he's asleep yet. He went and came back and said, no, they're having kirtan, so they'll get tired and they'll fall asleep in a while. So they said, well, just wait, be patient. And then they fell asleep. They didn't wake up until midday the next day. There they are, lying out in the field with all their weapons, daggers and tridents and swords and spears, lying right in the middle of the field in broad daylight. And they woke up, and I'm like, God, we're going to get caught. And they took off running. And then they met again that night, and they started criticizing each other. You fell asleep for... No, you fell... And then finally the leader said, look, this internal dissension will just destroy our mission. So the real problem is we did not do our puja properly. So tonight we will do a special puja. We will offer blood and wine to Durga, and by her mercy we will be protected. So they did that, and he said, and sharpen your weapons too, just in case. So they went and met again under that tree, and they sent out the spy, go see what's going on, see if they're asleep yet. They came back, now they're eating. He says, well, when they finish eating, they'll fall asleep. I don't know. It's like, this Nityananda, he's unusual, He's a gosai, he doesn't sleep sometimes. What kind of gosai is he? I saw how much he eats. I saw the jewels. What kind of... He's not a gosai. He's not a goswami. They started arguing. I'll go check again. So I went back. And then the spy came back. He was like pale white. He said, I think we better forget the whole thing. So what's the matter now? He said, there's these guards. They're monsters. They're huge, And they're walking around with raised weapons chanting, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna. I mean, they're not even human. But where are they even from? I just, I don't want to go back there. I said, well, where do these guards come from? I said, well, probably some king came to visit this Goswami, and those are his personal bodyguards, and maybe he's a religious fanatic, and that's why they just can't stop chanting Hare Krishna. So they began speculating, and then they said, well, we better just try again some other night. So they came back on another night, and they assembled under that tree, and then all of a sudden it got so dark, nobody could see their daggers in front. They couldn't see anything, nothing at all. Just pitch black, they couldn't see a thing. And then he started trying to find their path, and one of them fell into a moat, broke all his bones. And then leeches and scorpions and snakes came and started biting him, and swarms of mosquitoes just devouring him. Another one got stuck in the pricker bushes and torn to shreds. And just some terrible calamity befell every single one of them. And then Indra was so infuriated, they attacked Nityananda and began hurling down these huge blocks of ice and just breaking their bones and smashing their skulls. And they were just so tormented that they couldn't even move. They just said, just let me die and get it over with. And then suddenly the leader realized, this Nityananda, he's the Lord. Because we forgot him, because we opposed him, we've lost our path, and everything's dark, and we're lost and bewildered and suffering like anything. My Lord, please, if I survive this episode, let me take shelter of your lotus feet. Suddenly the moon came out, their bones were healed, their wounds were healed. They looked at each other, and the leader went right to that house, and he surrendered to Lord Nityananda and said, please deliver me. I'm gonna commit suicide in just a few minutes, but just cast your glance upon me before that, and if you find it in your heart to forgive me. And then Lord Nityananda treated him so affectionately that he forgot to commit suicide, and he just became so enlivened and encouraged that he told all the soldiers in his dacoit army. He began to preach to them that we have to go out and spread this gospel of love of God everywhere. And then they got dispersed throughout the whole country. And if they missed anybody and they came to that dacoit's door, he preached to them and made them into pure devotees. In this way, Lord Nityananda delivered Bengal. And what was the question? why it was secret? Because it's all very confidential. And Lord Chaitanya did not want to be bothered by people knowing that he was God. He just wanted to be a humble devotee. And if everybody knew, then he would never have been able to fulfill his own purposes. So he kept everybody bewildered until he was done with his. And then Lord Nityananda told Mayadevi, remove that covering and let the world see the glorious fortune at their fingertips. I'm sorry, I get distracted sometimes. Any other questions or comments? Huh? Let's see. Antikanda Chaitanya Bhagavat. There's somebody else. Yes. It's not Mahaprakash, it was Abhishek. Yeah, it was at Raghava Pandit's house when Mahaprabhu sent him there from Puri. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Any other questions or comments? Yes. The Lord appears in every Kali Yuga in a golden form, but it's not Swayam Bhagavan Sri Krishna. It's Gaur Narayan. It's the golden form of Lord Narayan. And he gives the chanting of the holy name as the Yuga Dharma. But the highest attainment of Yuga Dharma is Vaikuntha. It's Prem in a Vaikuntha form with knowledge that he's God and we're Jivas and the rules and regulations and formalities that accompany that realization. Braj Prem is only given by Swayam Bhagavan himself, cannot be conferred or bestowed by anyone else. Thank you very much, Lord Guru Srila Prabhupada.